Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey, dog lovers. Welcome to Dr. Cat Gone to the Dogs. I'm your host, Dr. Catherine Prim. I'm a small animal veterinarian and fervent dog lover. So if you follow me on social media or interact with me at all online, then you'll know that I love to educate and surprise people. So when I post things and people say, "Oh my goodness, I did not know that," it really makes me feel like I'm making a difference. So for today's show, I have invited Dr. Tom Day, who is a specialist in emergency medicine for pets and works in an animal ER. He's going to talk with us today about the things that are in your home that could be a danger to your dog. So sit back for these brief messages and get ready to learn how to keep your dog safe. We'll be right back.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help. Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite. Pick up two bottles of Lickochops, get the third bottle free. New improved Lickochops with omega-6, omega-3, vitamin E, and now 6 extra direct-fed microbials. Even better for the digestive tract and immune system. And dogs love it. Try Lickochops. Buy two, get one free. This is Henry Lukasevic for Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. Okay, so we have Dr. Tom Day. Hey, Dr. Day.
Hey, Dr. Catherine, how are you?
I am doing well. So I'm really excited to have you today because you are in the trenches in the animal ER and you see some stuff that maybe I don't see in my day practice. So I want to tell everybody the dangers in their home that you see after hours. So let's get started. What's the most common thing you see in dogs in the ER that's a household danger?
Yeah, I would say consumption of any foreign material. And we have to pick on some breeds here. Of course, any dog can be prone to eating anything around the house, but we see an overrepresentation of young Labradors, young Goldens, young Doodles, Labradoodles, or Golden Doodles. So I pick on them because we see a lot.
Do you think that they're just curious or they're just busy, or why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is most tend to be young, so they're bored. They've learned to chew from a puppy, and I think once they get exposed to it, they just don't stop.
So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So you said foreign things. So what are some examples of some things that you've had to remove surgically?
Yeah, well, this list could be really long. any piece of clothing material, whether it be socks are very common, underwear, T-shirts. I'd say outside of the clothing, squeakers from dog toys, even those indestructible dog toys, I would put up there pretty high as the most common thing that we take out. Anything to do with small children around the house, whether it would be their toys, whether it would be diapers, all the way up to we've taken many tampons out of dogs' intestines. So as far as clothing material, anything's fair game, but those are certainly the most common.
So here on radio, kind of gross things are sort of interesting. So I'm thinking gross things. If you leave gross things on your floor, you're putting your dog at risk, your socks, your underwear, and I guess gross things they can get out of the trash. Have you removed baby diapers from dogs?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I bet that was nice by the time it came out.
With the popularity of cloth diapers, the disposable ones tend to get torn up and they will pass through. But the cloth ones they consume them whole.
Oh, so what our listeners can do then, I guess, is sort of survey the environment for items that are just sort of laying out that might be gross or enticing to their dogs. I've removed socks, underwear, and toys also. So I know you're right.
And as far as food items, especially during the summertime, dogs are notorious for eating chewing up corn cobs. And I would say that probably one of the more destructive items to the intestinal tract is a corn cob.
So they cannot digest the corn cob. So you're having to remove these surgically.
Correct.
Ooh, okay.
The dogs that can chew up on their little teeny tiny pieces, a lot of those will pass, but we're taking out, you know, 1 or 2 inch long chunks, and they get lodged in the intestine and do a lot of damage.
So maybe people should make sure that they have a cover on their trash can and certainly make sure that they're not purposefully giving dogs these items. Didn't you say something about maybe the rough cloth of the diapers kind of, it just won't pass?
They won't pass. And when you, if they shred them, they sort of tie up among themselves to make this, if tiny little shreds can just make this big clog to the intestine or to the stomach.
So tell me, what would this dog look like? If one of my dog lovers has a dog that's done this and they don't know it, what would they be seeing?
Well, I'll give the example of the dogs in my house. My dogs are what we call food motivated. In other words, if they miss a meal, then there's a problem. So I think most owners who know their dogs as being very happy, very excitable, wanting that next meal, they're going to feel sort of crummy. They're probably going to vomit. They're not going to eat. And some dogs actually might show pain when you touch their bellies.
So vomiting and not feeling well can increase your suspicion that there is something. So do you like it when they come in and they know the item, the offending item might be in there, or what helps you getting there early? Do you have any tips?
Yeah, I think, I mean, most of the ER doctors are very tuned into this because it's so common on weekends and at nights. And they'll ask many questions, sort of like a detective hunt to know what they suspect might be eaten. But I would say half the time they don't know.
Okay, so everyone out there, if your dog is usually really into their meal and they don't eat, then it might raise your antenna to start watching for something, maybe looking through the house for possible offending items, covering your trash cans and picking up things from the floor that could be enticing to your dog is probably good advice. Dr. Day, what else? Are there any other things that people might not expect that are driving dogs into your hands?
You know, with all of the chewable dog toys out there, I recommend good old-fashioned Nylabones. That's what my dogs get. They get Nylabones. They might chew the little teeny tiny pieces off. I've never really taken a Nylabone out of a dog before. So if your dog really is into chewing things, I would get the hardest, firmest material possible.
And no squeaker.
No squeaker toys. I mean, we bought them occasionally for our dogs, and for whatever reason, they go straight for that squeaker.
And it comes down to knowing your dog, because my dog now has a toy with a squeaker, and she loves it. She doesn't chew on it. She just squeaks it. But I've certainly had dogs in the past that would tear any toy up. So you know your dog.
Definitely.
So what about, this is something actually, the second one on your list is something actually I see in my day practice as well, over-the-counter medications. So talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing in over-the-counter medications in the ER.
I would say the number one ingestion of almost anything, prescription or non-prescription, is ibuprofen. Over-the-counter ibuprofen, the tablets are sugar-coated, and dogs will eat every single one of them that they can get their hands on.
And so for those of you that have heard my soapbox about not giving human medications to dogs without talking to your veterinarian, you can imagine having a dog give themselves some ibuprofen can cause some pretty serious problems. Can you describe for us what the dog lover might see to be an indicator they needed to go see you?
Well, that's the scary part. So for ibuprofen, with a very, very high numbers of tablets they can consume, our biggest concern is kidney failure. And depending on the size of dog, of course, it would determine how many tablets it would take to cause a problem. But they're really not going to see any sign of kidney injury until they're sort of far along the process and their kidneys are hurt pretty bad. And they're just usually your vomiting, not wanting to eat, depression type of signs. But immediately after eating the ibuprofen, they will show you nothing.
That's really scary. So this is another case where prevention is your friend here. Keep your medications well out of your dog's reach. I actually had a patient who stole the pill bottle out of his owner's purse. and 8 pieces of the bottle and the ibuprofen as well. So certainly pretending you're a dog and looking around your environment to eliminate these things is your best effort here.
And your scenario is actually pretty common. The other scenario that's relatively common is the cat that knocks the bottle of ibuprofen off the kitchen counter, and then the dog takes care of it.
Yeah, we have that at our house too. They work together to do bad things. So what about, besides medications, what about vitamins and things? Do you see vitamin toxicosis?
We get a lot of calls about dogs that have eaten usually multivitamin tablets. And thankfully, the levels of the vitamins in there are not going to hurt a dog. The fat-soluble vitamins, especially vitamin D, can certainly be a problem, especially with the high dose vitamin D that you'll see occasionally. And usually these are the capsules that are 10,000 units or higher. And for some reason, dogs, they like them. They like to eat them, whether it's, I don't think they're sugar-coated, but dogs will certainly eat a lot of the vitamin D capsules.
So do those dogs act sick before the damage is done, or is it, what are you seeing?
Well, again, I think these dogs were worried about their calciums increasing, and you're really not going to see a lot of signs of that until it happens. And usually the first thing you'll see is they'll drink a lot of water and urinate a lot. But I think for most of these over-the-counter medications, I'd say the number one reason they bring them in is because they've seen their dog do it immediately.
That's what I was going to say. That's when they call me. He's got this bottle.
Now, cats with the ibuprofen is that it only takes 2 tablets of ibuprofen to cause kidney failure in a cat. And we've had many, many cats that have had kidney failure because of eating 2 tablets of ibuprofen.
That's very frightening. I'm amazed. I don't work in ER medicine, but I've seen a lot of these things. So it must be super common because I'm not there all night. But what about over-the-counter medications like cold medicines?
Well, especially coming up in cold and flu season is we do see a lot of dogs that have eaten it. And most of those medications that cause a problem are stimulants. And you will see clinical signs soon after they eat them. They'll seem fidgety all the way up to potential seizures.
That's very scary. So you might see these with symptoms and have to deduce what they ate.
Correct. And again, for us, it's sort of like detective work. And of course, the owners are very concerned. And when we start putting thoughts in their mind about what it could be, they go home and find out. And a lot of times we'll get the answer and be able to help a little bit faster.
Right. Well, and on the same vein, prescription medications, dogs can get in your purse and get your prescription medications as well. So keeping those out of reach, I've actually treated a few of those too. Maybe we could briefly touch on what owners might see when they eat prescription medications. Of course, they're extremely variable.
Yes, they are. And again, that there are so many different types of antidepressants and anti-ADHD medications that are out there. And it's very helpful when they come in with a trade name so we can look up exactly what it is. But these antidepressants and anti-attention deficit hyperactive disorder medications typically cause stimulation type signs. So they're going to be shaking. They're going to be maybe all the way up to seizuring. They're not going to be right pretty quickly.
Okay. So I did a show a little while ago about CBD oil, and that brings me to the recreational drugs. Do you ever see a patient that has ingested recreational drugs?
Yeah, marijuana is going to be our top one here. And whether it's you're in a state that legalizes marijuana or you're not, it's a really, really common toxicity. And ER doctors know it from the second these dogs walk in the door. They're a little bit shaky. When you put your hand in front of their face, they sort of jump back. They're dribbling urine. Their heart rates are low. The absolute best thing about marijuana, at least recreational marijuana, is that death is very, very uncommon. All these dogs go home within 12 to 24 hours.
Well, that's encouraging and good news, because another poison on your list is ratten. And I sadly see several different kinds of these. And so I want to kind of touch on that. What do you think dog lovers need to know about that?
Well, I just saw one actually on Tuesday. It's a very, very sad story. I think the bottom line for pet owners is if you have a dog or a cat, please do not put out any rat or mouse poison. These poisons are meant to attract animals, and they will search out and eat every single morsel of it. So it seems logical. I mean, I have this time of year, the mice start to invade the house because it's starting to get cold again, and we live trap them and get rid of them. So there's three major types of rat poison, and with actually all three of them, they're not going to show you an immediate clinical sign. They're going to develop their problems within anywhere from 1 to 7 days. So the most common type are the only rat poison that we have an antidote for is something that inhibits vitamin K in the body. So what that does is they consume the rat poison, and within 2 to 4 days, they start showing signs of bleeding. We are very encouraging about this type, and I would say 98% of dogs that consume this type go home within a couple of days.
Well, especially if, please, everyone out there, if you see your dog eating rat poison, bring the dog and the container of the rat poison to us, because it really helps us know what to do. So, yeah, that's the thing I want everybody to know about that.
And I agree. I think most of the time, that's the situation. The owners have the dogs pull out the container, and it's now not hidden. It's out in the open, and they've figured out that they've consumed it. But they all look the same. They're all blue-green or bluish cubes, but the ingredients can certainly vary. And if you see your dog, eat it, get them immediately. It doesn't matter where, either to your family veterinarian or the ER, because that way we can take care of it. And almost all the dogs will survive that scenario.
So the newer ones have really kind of been bad, in my opinion, because by the time you see the clinical signs of the seizures or whatever, the prognosis is not as good. So I'm with you on the advice, pet owners, just don't have it. Don't have it in your environment. So what about these dogs that maybe can get into the cabinet under the sink and find things under there, like cleaners and things? Do you ever treat dogs for doing stupid things like that?
Well, yeah, occasionally. We recently had a dog in which the owner used a Clorox-type product in the toilet, and the dog actually drank out of the toilet and basically ruptured his esophagus. These agents burn. He did okay, but yeah, they will drink it. Again, I don't know why they would do that, but they certainly do.
So put the lid down, I guess, after you clean the toilet and make sure things are put away out of reach. So here we are. It's cold. We've talked about wintertime. There are things in your garage that are also dangerous to pets, and the notorious antifreeze. Are you still seeing antifreeze toxicity out there?
We are. So up here, I live in southern Wisconsin, and especially in the northern part of the state, it's the time of year where people secure their cabins for the winter time, and they actually put antifreeze in the pipes throughout all of the water so the pipes don't freeze. So yeah, we certainly are seeing antifreeze. It's also a time of year up here where people are changing the antifreeze in their car, looking for winter, and it really doesn't take a lot of antifreeze to harm a dog or a cat. And again, when we have some of these toxins, it would be helpful for us to have antidotes, but I would say 90% of the time we don't. For antifreeze, we do have an antidote, but we need to see that dog within hours of consumption to make sure the antidote works.
And there are animal-friendly choices of antifreeze now, so certainly our dog lovers out there could read the labels and make sure that at least in their garage, they have the propylene glycol antifreeze rather than the ethylene glycol. So I think that is a good take-home message.
It is. And one of the sad parts about veterinary ER on occasion is people do mean things like deliberately poison dogs and cats. And unfortunately, the last two topics that we talked about with the rat poison and the antifreeze happen to be the two most commonly used to deliberately poison dogs.
Oh, that just hurts my heart. So you told me something else in the garage that I did not know, and I want to highlight it because I think it's super interesting. Talk to us about Gorilla Glue.
All right, Gorilla Glue is a special type of glue that expands. I guess that's one of its attractive features when you repair things. I don't know why dogs eat it, but they'll eat it and it will expand in the stomach to actually form the shape of the stomach. It's something that, again, owners are going to know that their dog got into. Usually we see them pretty quickly. And it's a surgical disease. You're not going to take that any way out except surgically. I actually had the mold of a dog's stomach from Gorilla Glue that I took out on my desk for about 10 years.
Do the dogs recover?
They do. So the other aspect about Gorilla Glue is that it's what's called exothermic. So it produces heat as it expands. So these dogs tend to have pretty severe stomach irritation as well as having to have a surgical procedure.
Wow. No, I've never seen that. So, I mean, I learn something new every day. So I guess our best advice is to just take a look at your environment through the eyes of a dog. And dogs are, they're lower than we are and they see things differently. And I guess think about the fact that Advil has sugar coating and Gorilla Glue seems to be enticing. Are there any other thoughts that you kind of want people to take home from this?
Yeah, it's a time of year where a lot of people acquire puppies for Christmas, etc. And if you're in a household that has especially small children and nice big playrooms full of play toys, like in my house, puppies will chew. So it's a matter of either getting them off the floor or training a puppy not to chew. That's a good one, Catherine. If you can think of a way for a puppy not to chew, you will be famous.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. So yeah. I have already talked to several of my friends who are getting puppies in the next several weeks. So, yeah, we have that discussion about they chew. So get them from an early age that those real hard nylabones and make them chew them. They'll chew them.
Teach them to choose to chew that instead of rifling through your laundry to get your socks and underwear. Cover your trash can. Make a habit of putting your purse up on a table instead of on the floor. And securing your prescription and over-the-counter medications in a place where the dog or children can't access them. The thing I really want to make sure that everybody knows after the show today is make sure you know where your animal ER is so that if you do have an animal emergency, you know where to go. You don't have to stop and think and search the internet and call and all of those things. Make sure you know where your animal ER is.
We didn't really address foods. Dogs should not eat people food. I mean, that's a blanket statement that I think everybody will agree with. Turkeys and with hams, they're very, very fatty. And I would say we see a handful of pancreatitis cases every weekend.
Yeah, I posted something about no people food and the things that are associated with holidays that pets shouldn't get. And several people, dog lovers, I'm assuming, said, well, I don't think a little bit of this or that will hurt my dog. And my reply was, you know, you just won't really know until you're cleaning up the vomit.
Yeah. And a good friend of mine, her dog ate half of a hot dog on a walk inadvertently and was in the hospital for 10 days. And she spent $10,000 treating that dog's pancreatitis.
Half of a hot dog. So you just don't know until you know, and then you're sorry. So you might should listen to Dr. Cat and Dr. Day, what you heard. Well, so I think that there was a lot of really useful information that we were able to share today. And I am so grateful that you were willing to take your time out to help educate my dog lovers here with me on Dr. Cat Gone to the Dogs. So I would also like to thank all of my loyal dog lovers for listening to Dr. Cat Gone to the Dogs on Pet Life Radio. And as always, my amazing producer, Mark Winter. And I would like to thank Dr. Day. Thank you.
You're welcome. Very, very enjoyable. Thanks, Catherine.
Okay, so everybody go out there and raise the roof.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.